We're talking about our political dysfunction, the so-called political industrial complex, and practical steps to improve our democracy. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Spending in federal elections in the 2016 cycle was more than $16 billion, which is greater than the annual budgets of at least a dozen states. According to the Center for Responsive Politics, the 2020 election will be the most expensive election in U.S. history by a large margin. Do you worry that our political system is broken? Is power truly vested with the people? What do you think of the money pouring into politics? We're at 800-642-1234. Catherine Gale is the co-author of The Politics Industry, How Political Innovation Can Break Partisan Gridlock and Save Our Democracy. She's former president and CEO of Germantown-based Gale Foods. Catherine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, I am so happy to be here this morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, take us inside this industry that you see it. How is this industry of politics working in our country? What is it?
This actually is a good thing to start with. We can start with the one thing about which virtually every American agrees, and that is that politics is broken. So no matter your ideology, nobody thinks that Washington, D.C., Congress in particular, is getting the job done. And it is really incumbent upon us now to take some time, even in the midst of this election season, to step back from the drama and say, why is this constant? Why is our disappointment constant? Why do we feel that our politicians are not solving our problems, that the way they perform in their jobs is something that would not allow us to keep our jobs in our companies?
Yeah. So who benefits from our current political system? When we look around and we say this dysfunction, it's everywhere, and we feel like we can't do anything about it, who is benefiting?
What I talk about in here is this idea, as I mentioned a moment ago, that Washington, D.C. is broken. Even though we all agree on it, we're actually in certain sense all wrong about that, which is to say, it turns out that Washington, D.C. isn't broken. It's actually doing precisely what it's designed to do. Our confusion is that we've assumed that the political system is designed to solve problems for the voters, to serve the public interest. But actually, most of the rules, norms, and practices have over time been designed or optimized by and for the benefit of what I call the political industrial complex. And that is our political parties and everybody in the industry of politics, sort of growing their jobs and revenue off of this entire business of politics. And it turns out the people in the business of politics are actually doing very, very well, meaning this business is working for them, even as the American public has never been more dissatisfied. So the task before us is to figure out how can we make the design be such that what it takes for the industry to do well is if the customers, meaning the voters, the citizens, are doing well. And that is currently not at all the case. They get to do well no matter whether we're doing well. And that's a design problem.
We're talking with Catherine Gale, who is here with her new book. It's called The Politics Industry, and we're looking at developing innovations for our political system, taking your questions as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Jay joining us from Two Rivers. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. I think there is a real simple solution that's so easy, too few people try it. I realized that our system was broken back in 1980 already, and in that election, my wife and I voted for an independent presidential candidate. At the time, it was John Anderson, who was a Republican congressman from Illinois, I believe, running independently. And some years later, Ross Perot got a little bit closer, but for some reason, we swing left and right and never seem to hit a home run, and here we are today. So I think that if a large quantity of people would vote for third parties, that even if your candidate doesn't make it, it would send a strong message to the two parties that dominate our system now.
Jay, thank you. Catherine, what about independent and voters and third-party candidates to try to break up this two-party control system?
Well, I just couldn't agree more with Jay. I think that more competition is the key, one of the keys to progress. Here's the challenge. Jay's idea to vote for independent candidates like John Anderson or Ross Perot doesn't come up for us enough, because our system is designed to keep out third parties, to keep out independent candidates. I often say that despite the dysfunction that we see with our political parties, they actually work very well together in one particular way, and that is behind the scenes, they collude to keep out new competition, because it works better for them to keep this duopoly. And part of what, well, a very important part of our book is talking about what rule do we need to change so that we can have more independent candidates, more third parties. And that's not because we are trying to change who gets elected. I actually am totally fine with Republicans, with Democrats, with any new party we would have. What we want is to change the fact that the current two parties are guaranteed to be the only two, regardless of what they do or do not do. So we're not concerned about changing the winners nearly as much as we're concerned about changing what the winners are incented to do. And if I could give just an example to follow up on Jay's point, competition, healthy competition in any of the industries most of us work in, is what drives progress. So sometimes, let's say, there'll be a new competitor that comes up with a good idea for a new technology, and either that competitor will grow to become a major company in the industry, or the competitor will be bought, or some of the existing competitors will take that idea on, and that's how we'll drive progress. But that rarely happens in politics, although if we go back to Ross Perot, whom Jay mentioned, who ran in 1992, he didn't win. He only got 19% of the vote as an independent candidate for president in November. But here's what's really interesting. He didn't win, but the American people won, because Perot ran very focused on the debt and deficit. And he had, if you were alive that time, you would, may remember these charts that he ran on, on TV saying, you know, this is a huge problem. And then that put pressure on both parties to come together in the, during the Clinton administration to pass balanced budgets. We actually ended up with a federal budget surplus. And recently, last year, Perot passed away, and one of Clinton's top advisors, Paul Begala, was quoted at the time as saying, "I am not sure we would have ever balanced the budget without the pressure Perot and his voters brought to the issue." So the fact that we never have that kind of competition, we just have two sides that are so diametrically opposed, and no new competition is pushing them, really does hurt us. So kudos to Jay. I'm completely with him.
Catherine Gale's book is called The Politics Industry. Is our current system of American elections and electoral dynamics beyond repair? Can it be fixed? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing our political system, what's holding back economic and social progress in America. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than $1 billion has been spent on TV ads for the presidential election. That's from an NPR analysis of the latest ad spending data from tracking firm Advertising Analytics. Almost all of the TV ad buys are concentrated in just six states, Wisconsin being one of them. Do you wish you had other viable options beyond the Republican and Democratic parties? Do you think most people who are elected to office want to solve problems, or are they more influenced by money, by power? What needs to change? Join in 800-642-1234. Catherine Gale's new book is called The Politics Industry, and she stays with us for the hour. Catherine, you propose a two-pronged solution to this, starting with a final five primary system. Can you explain how that would work?
Yes. So we need to change two things about our elections in order to correct this this lack of competition, this lack of healthy competition, this lack of focus on the voters. So the first is, let's get rid of party-controlled primaries. Right now, party-controlled primaries push people on both sides so far to the right or to the left that when they get to Washington, D.C., all they can think, not all, but a big, huge issue for them is, I'm going to need to win my primary, you know, in 2 years or in six in the Senate. And so I really can't come together and work with the other side because I won't be able to get back through this party primary where there's low turnout and voters tend to be more ideological. So let's just remove that problem that keeps them from working together. And we can replace that with a single primary at one ballot where everybody runs. And then instead of just advancing one Republican and one Democrat, let's let the five top finishers from that primary go to the general election so that we have a good debate across the spectrum with new ideas and diverse visions and candidacies. Then the second thing we need to change is in our general election, let's stop letting people win with less than a majority. So we rarely think about this, but in the United States, because of history, we let someone win with the most votes, even if they don't have a true majority over 50%. And that has an odd effect, which means that it's difficult for new competition to get started because people are afraid to vote for, let's say, an independent because they think it will take votes away from the candidate they like the, you know, second best. And if we get rid of that by implementing something called ranked choice voting and we require the candidate, the winner, to have a true majority, then they'll have a true majority, but it also incents this new competition. Those two things together, open top five primaries, ranked choice voting, the general election, are what we call final five voting. And it's a real healthy system that puts the public interest first and connects solving problems with getting elected.
What do you see out of ranked choice voting? Because some states have implemented it.
Yes, we have municipalities and around the country that have implemented it. Maine has implemented ranked choice voting for both their state and federal elections. And countries, other countries in the world, use ranked choice voting. We haven't yet had a state implement this package of open top five primaries with ranked choice voting in the general election, and that's going to give us the best results overall. But we do see with ranked choice voting more satisfaction with the system, and we know that it creates an opportunity for candidates outside the duopoly to come in. And remember, I'm not saying that if we got rid of Republicans or got rid of Democrats, that would make things better. What I'm saying is more healthy competition would drive performance improvement for the most important customers, which should be the citizens. Just the way any company we work for has to solve problems for their customers to do well. And that's what healthy competition does, and that's what we're missing in politics. And ranked choice voting will bring us strongly in the direction of that competition.
We're talking with Catherine Gale, who is co-author of The Politics Industry, How Political Innovation Can Break Partisan Gridlock and Save Our Democracy. Let's take a call now. Duane is joining us from Wausau this morning. Hi, Duane.
Well, good morning. Good morning, Catherine. I think a lot of people are in your corner on, like, the third party. A lot of people have been saying that. I have for years. And you started out the statement by saying a lot of these politicians, I was with a Fortune 100 company for 30 years. A lot of these guys wouldn't even make middle management. They'd be canned. You know, they just, you know, they don't produce results. And that's what they're there for. They should produce results. But what would you think about, term limits and, like, getting rid of electoral college? Those two things. But then a lot of people harp on, like, you do 4 years as a U.S. senator, and they get free health care for life. I wish you guys could do a segment on that, or does Catherine know anything about how that works with these benefits these senators get?
Yeah, let's let Catherine respond here to the notion of term limits. What effect would that have?
Well, Duane, here's something that I think will resonate with you. There are a lot of ideas out there that might make a difference. But the ones that we should spend our time talking about are the ones that we could actually implement. So here's what I'll say. The fact is that term limits for Congress are not constitutional. And so we would have to have a constitutional amendment to change those. The Electoral College needs to be changed with a constitutional amendment, or there's another effort for an interstate compact, which is also complicated. Now, I'm not saying no one should work on wanting those constitutional amendments in the future, but what we want to focus on right now are what are the things we could change that we have power over changing that are reasonably achievable in a number of years, not decades. So that's why Final Five voting is basically in this sweet spot of being both worth doing and doable. And unfortunately, for people who are interested in term limits or electoral college, I don't see those as being in that sweet spot at all.
Let's bring in...
But you know what, can I say one other
thing?
I just want to say, you know, Duane brought something up about sort of this dissatisfaction with politicians. And I want to take the side, even though I'm critical of the political industrial complex, I want to really put a vote out there for the desire of politicians to really get things done for their constituents and to be serving their country and finding themselves actually a prisoner of the same system that we are dissatisfied with. So, for example, we have in Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher, who, you know, is a military veteran. He was in the Marines, and he wrote the foreword to my book. He's a Republican, and he wrote the foreword to my book with a Democratic congresswoman who's also a military veteran. She was in the Air Force, and they came together in this bipartisan way and said, hey, the foreword essentially says, you know, we both serve the country in the military, and then we wanted to continue serving our country in Washington, D.C., and yet when we got here, we found out that even though we're here for the same reasons, the system automatically places us now on different teams. Why is that? And so that is shared by so many politicians. So I want to suggest that if the system were different, we would not be as dissatisfied with the people who are in the system.
Let's bring in Lewis now in Trapper Creek, Alaska. Hi, Lewis.
Hi.
Hi.
Actually, I'm on the interstate passing through, and I picked up your program.
Okay.
I need your help. I am establishing a new political party, and they are going to be called None of the Above. Our platform is to get a constitutional amendment for the primaries that includes the choice of none of the above. And if none of the above wins, we do a new primary, and those that tried the first time can't get into the second one. They've already gave it their best shot. Quite honestly, I think in a lot of local elections, I think in the national election, the choice of none of the above would win a lot. And it's because people a lot of times vote for the one they like the least because they don't want to waste a vote, and they could put a vote on that third party and feel like they were actually doing something.
Making a statement, putting their position out there if none of the candidates are really what they're looking for. Catherine, what do you make of that?
Yeah, Lewis, I resonate with the sentiment that you have here. I will return to something I said to Duane. I don't suggest that we put all of our energy into things like constitutional amendments, which are incredibly long projects, may never get done. But instead, we can get the same kind of benefits you're talking about by implementing Final Five voting, which each state can do individually. And I also want to make a point. My focus is very much on Congress. That's where we see the most division, the most partisanship. So in Wisconsin, we're not talking about changing the rules of the game from Madison. We're talking about asking Madison to change the rules of the game for Congress.
We're asking how to create a functioning, healthy democracy at the end of the day. Catherine Gale has looked at this as well. She is the former CEO of Gale Foods in Germantown and author of The Politics Industry. We'll pick this up with Catherine Gale right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. So here's a central question to ponder this hour. Will the dysfunctional politics industry continue to determine the health, prosperity, and security of America, or will you? It's a question asked in the book, The Politics Industry. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What does political innovation mean to you? What do you think of the concept of a special interest for the general interest, or the idea of political philanthropy? We're exploring that framework. Catherine Gale co-wrote The Politics Industry with Harvard Business Professor Michael Porter, and Catherine stays with us for the hour. Let's take another call now. Jerry is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
If you're talking about, like, majority wins, are you talking about getting rid of the Electoral College? And if so, would that mean that New York and California would pretty much decide our presidency and the rest of us could just sit by and watch?
Yeah, so where does the Electoral College position here in this analysis, Catherine?
Thanks, Jerry, for that question. No, I'm not talking about changing the Electoral College. And I probably should have made this clear up front. So our book, The Politics Industry, goes into the design of our system and the reasons for the dysfunction. And our proposal is very much focused on addressing the dysfunction in Congress. Because as we can see, even from Jerry's question, people aren't in agreement about whether the presidency is broken or the president is doing a great job or not a great job. People aren't in agreement about the Electoral College. Here's something people agree with, and I started with this. People agree that Congress is broken across the ideological spectrum. So let's start with something we really all agree on. And that's where we're going to change the rules, are the elections for our House of Representatives and our senators.
Let's bring in John now in Brown Deer. Hi, John.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to speak on the air and address a question to your guest. At one time, I was a member of the now inoperative or not functioning Socialist Labor Party of America. And at one time, that party qualified to run candidates for the political offices in opposition to the Republicans and Democrats. And at that time, there was the equal time rule that allowed minority candidates who had minority parties who had qualified candidates to be interviewed if the television show or perhaps even the radio show interviewed a candidate from the major party. The network would have to give equal time to a minority party candidate, and I would like to like the response of your guest to the suppression of minority parties and minority political platforms because of the elimination of the equal time doctrine. Mm.
John, thank you for that. Catherine.
Yeah, John, thank you. I am aware of that provision, and we haven't focused on that in our work because we've stayed focused on the ballot itself and the choices that people see or don't see in the primary and in the general, and whether people feel that they would be wasting their vote by choosing someone else or not. And that what we want to do is go at the biggest impediment, go at the biggest bottleneck first, and that really is the ballot in the primary and the general elections. And then it may be that after we implement Final Five voting for Congress, it may be that there will be other rules and practices that, if we change them, could also contribute to a debate that really helps the voters figure out who they would like to select and helps bring new ideas into the conversation. But that's not part of what we're recommending right now. One thing, I'm a business person. What we always say in business is strategy is about choosing what not to do. So just because I say we're not doing that right now doesn't mean it's not necessarily a good idea. It means that we want to stay focused on the single most powerful change that we have the power to make. And that's changing how we vote. That's Final Five voting. And we can change it by having Madison change those rules of the game for Congress.
So critics of ranked choice voting may say that many voters won't rank all five candidates, like that their votes will essentially be tossed out after one or two rounds. Do you see that as an issue?
Kate, I don't. Here's the thing. Many voters right now choose not to go vote, meaning they're not voters. So citizens choose not to vote. So citizens always have the option to vote, to not vote. They have the option on a ballot to rank all the candidates or not. And their ballots are still valid, even if they only rank two or even only one, for example. So nobody is in a worse off position. Everybody has an opportunity to be in a better off position.
So when you look at the money pouring into politics, the money that it takes to run these campaigns for Congress, how do you start to dismantle the cost here in order to run a political campaign to get elected to office?
There's no question that money in politics occupies a lot of our attention. And there's a reason for that, because there's a lot of money and there's a lot of special interest money. Mm. Here's the thing, though. Sometimes the way to solve issues is not to go directly at them. So there's nothing wrong with money in and of itself, meaning we need money to start our businesses. We need money for candidates to get their message out. We need money to run our elections. We need money to research issues and discuss them. Here's what the problem is, though. It turns out that in our politics system right now, money is more important than votes. So instead of trying to just have less money, here's the key. Let's make votes more important than money. And how we make votes more important than money is by implementing Final Five voting, making sure that elections are not decided in the primary. Instead, the general election decides who wins, and everybody in the district has a say in that, because right now you usually know in most House districts, for example, who's going to win based on who won the primary. Whereas under this new system, you wouldn't really know who's going to win until you're done with the general election. So raising the power of votes will be more important and more powerful than artificially decreasing money while leaving the existing party control and non-majority winner system intact.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Catherine Gale. She's the author of The Politics Industry, and we're talking about our way we elect people to Congress. Do you think most people who are elected to office want to solve problems? Is partisan polarization a good thing or bad thing? What do you think it would take to get the Democratic and Republican parties to work more collaboratively? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Conrad, who's joining us from Madison. Hi, Conrad. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm just wondering in this context about the influence that Bernie Sanders has had on the candidate in the Democratic Party. It seems to me, even though he didn't win the primary, he has had a major influence on the platform of the candidate. And I'll let it go with that.
Thanks, Conrad.
Yeah, competition always has an influence. Here's the problem that we have right now is that the influence always ends up narrowing down to two major party candidates. And that is, you know, where the problem is created. So what we want to have is this competition, this healthy competition, go all the way through the general election so that we're not left with in our congressional elections just two choices. And in many cases, we already know who the winner is in the general election. So we want the competition to end up mattering and influencing not just what people say they're for, but the actions that people are incented to take, and that those actions benefit, you know, the public interest overall. And you know, if I could also speak to, you know, Conrad from Madison, I want to bring up one other thing that he didn't specifically ask, but it brings it up because he's from Madison. I love talking to you this morning, Kate, and your listeners, because you're in Wisconsin. So yes, we're talking about my book and I talk about it nationwide, but what's amazing is in Wisconsin, people are actually taking this to action, and we see incredible bipartisan leadership in Madison for these changes. So at this time when everybody thinks everything's divided, both nationally and perhaps even in Madison, I want to just call out State Senator Dale Kuenga, a Republican from Brookfield, and State Representative Daniel Reamer, a Democrat from Milwaukee. And they're both veterans, by the way, or they're both, I'm sorry, in the reserves. And they have come together as our lead sponsors for this bill that they'll introduce in the next section, in the next session. And we have Tony Kurtz, a Republican, another veteran, an Army veteran who's also a co-sponsor. We have Republicans and Democrats, and they're saying, hey, we have different ideologies and we believe in our ideologies, and we're going to keep those ideas for policy and not necessarily agree on them. But here's something we do agree on. Let's have rules of the game, rules of our elections that incent people in Washington, D.C. to come together and fix problems. So I would want to say, in the midst of all of this craziness of this election season, there's a lot going on in Wisconsin, in Madison, and also with the business and community leaders across the bipartisan spectrum who have come together to support this legislative effort. It's really quite exciting.
Catherine Gale founded the Institute for Political Innovation. Her new book is called The Politics Industry. Do you worry about our political system? Can it hold together? What do you think would change democracy in America for the better? What innovations would you like to see in how our country selects people in Congress? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Catherine Gale here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with author Catherine Gale. Her book is called The Politics Industry, and it explores this concept of a political industrial complex, that there's a private industry within our public institutions that's working to tamp down competition and working against the best interest of the people who politicians are elected to serve. Let's take another call now. Jerry is joining us from Campbellsport this morning. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
So, as I explained when I called in, I joined a little bit late, so I may have missed this already, but I'm curious as to what the mechanism would be to get this kind of in place. I know you're mentioning that it needs to happen in, you know, say, Madison for Wisconsin. Is that done by some other body of influence that, you know, or voters voting for
how does
people
it get through? Yeah.
Right.
Jerry, thanks. Catherine.
Yeah, you know, Jerry, we didn't talk about that yet. And actually, I couldn't have thought of a better question, because in the end, I hope people read my book. I hope they like the ideas, but it makes no difference if we don't actually implement it, right? And so here's the key. Article 1 of our Constitution gives virtually all the power of making the rules of elections to the states individually. So it turns out that in Madison, we, the state legislature and the governor making the laws, are in charge of how we elect our federal politicians. So the for us in Wisconsin, we need a bill passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, and then it gets done. And what's amazing, and I mentioned this a moment ago, is that we already have six co-sponsors, Republicans and Democrats, who have come together to say we have these different ideologies, but we agree on this. And we have a whole organization called Democracy Found. I co-founded it with Austin Ramirez, who is the CEO of a wonderful Wisconsin company, Husco. And we co-founded this in 2017. It is run by Sarah Eskrich, our executive director. You can get more information, Jerry, at democracyfound.org. And this is, and then we have a whole group of leaders, bipartisan, you know, Republicans, Democrats, independents, and community and business leaders who are coming together again around this idea, even as they remain equally passionate about perhaps policy differences that they have. And this is how democracy should work. We want to agree on the system, and then we want to engage and debate and figure out a way forward, even with our different ideas. So for you, Jerry, I'd invite you to go to democracyfound.org, get engaged with us, tell your friends to do that, and then we will give the message into our representatives in Madison to vote for this bill when it comes up. And that's how it is going to get done. And I just want to say, again, I said State Senator Dale Kuringa, State Representative Daniel Reamer, State Representative Tony Kurtz, Joel Kitchens, Todd Novak, and Lisa Subek. Those are all our co-sponsors. If they are your representatives, please call them and thank them for what they're doing. It's amazing.
Let's bring in Gary now in Ripon. Hi, Gary.
Good morning. I think the very first thing we need to do is stop believing that the founding fathers of the USA were infallible instruments of God, and that if we try to change anything that was handed down to us from them, we're going against God, so we can't do it.
That you want to say that, you know, we can make adjustments. That was then, this is now, that we don't have to stay entrenched in what the founding fathers envisioned. Catherine?
Well, Gary, it's interesting. I'll look at it just another way. Whether or not, you know, we think they had all of the best ideas, they did limit themselves to a very short constitution. And I mean, it fits in the pocket, right? We have this proverbial pocket constitution. And in that, they gave, as I just said, the states, for example, all this power over elections. There are a lot of things that we think of as part of our democracy that aren't at all in the constitution. And they've all been rules that we've made up since then. And if they end up not working for us, the founders did say we can remake them. They didn't even try to tell us how to run our elections in the Constitution. And I love, in Wisconsin, we have a tradition in Wisconsin of trying to figure out how to make the rules of democracy work better. If you go back to the Progressive era, at the beginning of the last century, Wisconsin, we had Robert, you know, fighting Bob La Follette. That may sort of ring a bell for people. And he was the leader of the progressive era. And I don't mean progressive like today is sometimes associated with the left. I mean in making progress. And that was the last big time of political innovation. And if I could, Gary, I'll share this quote with you and the other listeners. Fighting Bob La Follette once said, let me see if I can remember it, America is not made, but is in the making. There is an unending struggle to make government representative. Mere passive citizenship is not enough. And so I love that, because what he was saying then and what resonates for us now is that we, the citizens, are in charge of the things that the founders didn't, you know, give us in that short constitution. And of course, we can always amend the constitution if we need to as well. But in this case, the power is right in the hands of our legislature, and they work for us and they listen to us. And we're getting a lot of great reception in Madison for changing the rules of the game for Congress. And as I said, even from, for example, Congressman Mike Gallagher, who will tell you he would love to be in Washington, D.C. with final five voting as the way others are elected, because he believes that that will create an environment where both sides can work together to solve problems. And he's there, so I believe him.
We're talking with Catherine Gale, co-author of The Politics Industry, How Political Innovation Can Break Partisan Gridlock and Save Our Democracy. Let's bring in another call. Jackie is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, thanks for the program. I want to get that book.
Oh, great.
My comment was, personally, I feel that this whole country is run by corporations, lobbyists. It's very rare to have somebody that will listen to you or help you, which I've had experiences with over and over. It's like the old-time taxation without representation. That's how I feel. We're not represented at all. And I have had a few instances of that, and I just think, well, what are our politicians doing for us?
Jackie's wondering, what about the little person saying that lobbyists and corporations are driving this?
Yeah, Jackie, lobbyists and corporations play a role in that political industrial complex. And what Final Five voting does is change the rules in order to make sure, not that the political industrial complex disappears, and it doesn't need to, but in order to make sure that the only way for the political industrial complex to do well is if the public interest is being well served, meaning that voters like you look at the political system and say, yeah, they're making progress. Now, that doesn't mean that we'll have some kind of utopia or we'll all magically agree, but we will see progress being made, we will see innovation, and we will feel represented after we implement Final Five voting. And so, Jackie, I do hope you get the book, and it's a good time for me to note that all the author's proceeds from the book go right back into a not-for-profit organization to spread these ideas and help implement them around the country. So I don't feel bad at all about saying, yes, please buy the book. But then most important, please get involved.
Yeah, and, you know, we only have a few seconds left, but what can involvement do? What is the impact of being involved in the process?
Thomas Jefferson once is quoted to have said, in America, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority who participate. And historically, most of us, certainly me, have thought that meant we need to participate by voting. But what I now know is it means we also have to participate in the design of the rules that create the behaviors. So we now have to tell our representatives in Madison to please change the way we elect our representatives to Congress by implementing Final Five voting. So go to democracyfound.org, get engaged that way, call your representatives, and that's how we'll move it forward.
Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. It was just wonderful. I mean, Wisconsin has the opportunity to be the leader in the country, and others will follow us.
Catherine Gale, author of The Politics Industry, co-author, Harvard Business Professor Michael Porter. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.